right in front of me, and I can honestly tell him that I'm going to knock him spark out. Leaping right hand by the Prince. Ooh. And a hard left. And Kelly's down for the third time.
Whoa! He's for real. The Prince is for real.
One more touch. And Carnival has gone. Bernard Gunn is the champion of the world. Bernard Gunn is the champion of the world. Fantastic, Bernard. Fantastic.
And here comes
you're very welcome along to Off the Brawl and Off the Ball, back after another busy week of boxing action. We're back with the full squad this week as well. Andy Lee has returned from Belfast.
I'm back.
How's the Game of Thrones theme?
It's good to be talking about boxing for a change after an intense few weeks of Off the Wall. But the Game of Thrones is going good. Good first episodes. You watched it, lads? Watched the first episode?
No, I haven't. But I'm not one of these people that takes pride at the fact that I've never seen it. I do want to. I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to binge on it either. I'm going to enjoy it. Mm. But there's a lot of people, I've never watched Game of Thrones, as if it's like a badge of honour.
Yeah.
Like, if people like Game of Thrones, let them watch it. And let them tune into Off the Wall and listen to Andy go into depth about it.
Sponsored by Discover Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
How was your trip up to...
had a good time.
Trip?
Yeah, I actually bumped into Hugh Russell there, former European champion, Olympian and British champion. As a fighter, bumped into him up there. That was the only boxing, Donny crossover that, was that I had. But that was a good time up there, yeah.
And coincidentally, we were talking about Phil's favourite show, Bullseye, last week, and then this picture emerges of Andy nailing the bullseye in the first
episode. Oh, yeah, yeah. I was shooting right-handed. I am actually right-handed, even though I'm a southpaw. And I was shooting right-handed at Owen, who's a left-hander. He was shooting left-handed. I said, give us a look at your one. And ping, straight away.
That's how we're doing in the pros.
But like,
you should have just dropped it and walked
off. In all the practices, I was like, they're all over the shop. I got the left-handed bullet, and his man said, now it's time for the competition. And it just popped them every time. So I'm fairly proud of that, yeah.
It's the
best thing I've done in a while.
So if you were playing golf, would you play right-handed?
Right-handed,
tennis?
Yeah. Everything right-handed. Write my name, spell my name right-handed. Don't do much left-handed.
So basically the headline is Andy Lee fought with his wrong hand for his entire boxing career.
Yeah, but a lot of fighters do. A lot of good fighters do. Even Oscar De La Hoya, Miguel Cotto, left-handed orthodox fighter. A lot of fighters do, and it's... I think I can see the logic in it, because most 90% of your work is your lead hand, your jabbing, your hooking, your setting up, your feinting. The backhand really is just, I know it's the power punch, but it's usually just thrown straight or an uppercut. There's not really much variation in what comes from your backhand, but in terms of your lead hand, there's a lot. So there's an argument for leading with your strong hand, because you can always develop the backhand to be that just mechanical thing where it's just one punch with variation of an uppercut or a hook, yeah, or a straight hand.
Straight punch. Just mind blown. I'm just gone blank. I don't know what to ask you now.
That's why I always had a good right hook. This was my lead hand.
Yeah. How did it come about? How were you first established this?
Well, my older brothers both boxed. They were. My oldest brother was all right-handers. They all fought orthodox. Then the brother next to me, he broke his wrist one summer, and was still going to the gym, and they said, well, just box southpaw now when you use your hand. I think he broke his left wrist, so he was boxing southpaw, and he stayed southpaw, and then I followed him as a southpaw, and my younger brother followed me as a southpaw, so that's how it came about. We were probably, there's so many more advantages to being a southpaw, because you're used to looking at the orthodox fighter all the time. They're not used to boxing against a southpaw. Like, it's becoming more, like, historically, southpaws are rare. Now it's not. I don't know if it's 50-50, but
you see it in commentary where, yeah, the way southpaws were talked about is almost like you were dirty. Like,
yeah, yeah, you were like, but, and they were so rare in the past. But now, I don't know if it's about probably, I'd say 60-40. Would you say? I don't know.
And there's a lot of switch hitting going on.
Switch,
as well.
Yeah. Well, fighters are so advanced these days that they can box both ways. But anyway,
I think statistically, though, southpaws still have the advantage.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I only saw it in the last month or two where it's like your man analysed like 1,000 fights and at Southpaw still have something like 55-45 advantage.
It's always the feet. It's the front foot that the battle for the front foot domination when you've got Southpaw going up.
There is, and that's more so at in the learning process. When you get the two good fighters, those kind of things don't really, like, I know it's always like put your foot on the outside of like for a southpaw, get your foot on the outside. I would never have that battle when I was eventually like at the top level, because there are advantages to being on the inside as well, and like a lot of fighters preoccupied themselves with that battle, but it's taken away from what's happening up here when the focus is down there on the feet.
I do tend to look for that in the first round or two and watching feet, and next thing somebody lands a big shot, like, nope. I was looking at people dancing around each other.
Yeah, but it's all in the feet anyway, boxing. Boxing is all in the feet, no matter, like, people think it's in the hands, but it's in the feet. The best fighters have the best footwork, and it's no coincidence that any good fighter, they have great footwork, because it starts in the feet. That's where everything begins, from being active with your feet, positioning, being placed right, and your foundation, and everything. Like, if your feet aren't there, you've got no hands, you know. There's no point in having good hands if you haven't got good feet.
And in terms of mechanics, just on that, was it a weird one for trainers where, you know, normally you're trying to set up your backhand with your lead hand, but in your case you were probably trying to get your jab hand into play more?
Yeah. But like with Emmanuel, it was always the jab was so important, you know. So the lead hand was, and I think in any, even with Zor, the lead hand is always so important for feinting and setting things up. It came, like, I think as from a coaching point of view, there are certain combinations and punches that work for southpaws, and that's what they'll drill into you, and things that have been proven over time that'll work for southpaws, and so they just work on those things. Like, I think it was an adjustment for Adam when I went, because I think I was the first real southpaw that he worked with for in any depth like that, and he had to make an adjustment as well as I had to make an adjustment. But There's like some coaches are better at it than others for southpaws, or suited to southpaws, but it's just horses for courses, isn't it, you know? And when you get to the highest level of boxing, those things are kind of irrelevant. Oh, he's a southpaw. No one even mentions it that he's a southpaw. You know, the ex fighter is a southpaw, because the guys that compete in that, they just take it as a given that's what they're gonna be up against.
Mm. And busy weekend of boxing, as I mentioned. Simon was particularly busy with Game of Thrones and golf, Tiger Woods, and all this Masters carry on.
Sunday
greatest
was a big
sporting
day,
comeback
of
all time.
Sunday was a big day, wasn't it?
Something. Well, I had a two TV setup. I had the Liverpool Chelsea game on the Mac, and then the golf on in the background. So yeah, I'm still pretty tired actually, because then I stayed up all night to watch. I watched the 2 o'clock episode of Game of Thrones on Monday morning, and then I was buzzing from that. I didn't get to sleep about 5 o'clock. So yeah. What was the question?
Tiger Woods a better comeback than Jon Snow?
I mean, yeah, it would have to be.
Lance, I haven't watched it yet. Spoiler alert.
Come on. I think everyone's aware of that.
Well, Phil, he dies and he's still appearing in the show, which I'm sure you're aware of. So.
Yeah, I saw him on Graham Norton as well. I figured something was going on.
As great comebacks go, though, I think you were right, though. I think Muhammad Ali's sporting comeback beats Tiger Woods at the moment.
Boxing, so many boxing stories beat any other sports. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to talk about Terence Crawford and Amir Khan soon. Terence Crawford got shot. You mentioned Danny Jacobs.
Vinny Pazienza.
He got in touch. The Tasmanian Devil got in touch. off the ball devil. Saying, like, you know, come on, guys, are you kidding me? Like, he was in a halo.
Bleed for this.
It's really good, actually.
But look, recently Tyson Fury, different issues, you know, maybe more similar to ones Tiger faced, you know, when you put them together. But look, everyone has their own merit. Everyone on their own merit, isn't it? You know, and everything's relative to the same person. No, comparing these things is redundant, isn't it? You know, because
it gets people wound up.
What makes me happy might not make you happy, but, you know, doesn't make it any less valid, you know, that kind of way. So
someone tweeted me using some colourful language saying this is like if Andy Lee
I was in there I was included in that tweet, and like I don't know what the point he was. What point was he trying to make?
I don't know, but
because you were trying, like you were trying to take away from golf. Was that it?
It was just a joke. Jokes don't fly on Twitter anymore, apparently. But
you're not allowed. No.
If you want to come back and knock out Canelo, Andy, I'm all for it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd actually have sounds to knock like him out, though, because you
John on Twitter says you can't do it.
I'll have five tune-up fights. I'll sacrifice everything. I'm back
zone.
In shape. I'll get back in shape. I'll knock out Canelo, and then we can just go and say to this guy, ha! Then I'm retired.
Yeah. That's
it. You'll still come in, though, and do off the brawl, yeah?
Yeah.
The numbers would fly up when Andy knocks out Canelo. We did a different version of Ireland versus Mexico last weekend just on that. 20-1 underdog. Dennis Hogan denied probably Irish boxing's most seismic ever win. The Kildare man, a seemingly deserving winner in everyone's eyes, including those of Munguia. Unfortunately, it was the judges at ringside who disagreed, and Dennis voiced his displeasure to DAZN's Chris Mannix after the fight.
Dennis Hogan, Dennis, you worked hard to get this opportunity. You fought hard for 12 rounds. Did you believe at the end that you had clearly won the fight?
Chris Mannix, I knew I won the fight. Oh, I knew it in my heart and soul. So disappointing to train as hard as I did and for this to happen. You know, we came here on good faith. And it's no disrespect to anybody here, but apart from the people who scored it and allowed this decision to go through, everybody knows. This is bad for boxing. Bad for me. Beltran's honour for whatever promotion offered us a rematch, we accept straight away. No questions asked.
You came into this fight, you and your trainer Glenn, you said Jaime Munguia is not a monster. You had great movement throughout the fight. What was the game plan against Munguia?
Well, you've seen the game plan. It was to keep moving, keep doing what we did, nullify him and land more shots. Every time we went back, I knew I was doing that. His power didn't faze me at all because I'm moving. I'm rolling with the punches. I'm doing what I'm doing. He was a great fighter, but I knew in his eyes he knew he was losing. In times, he was acting desperate. And I was just boxing, and sometimes I mixed it with him because I felt so confident. And you seen the way I was too. I wasn't even that worried that much, no disrespect, but I just knew that I could take the shots, I could land. I was landing more than him. Get CompuBox, to properly count the punches, you'll see that I was well winning that fight. I was so comfortable there. We knew we were winning that.
Do you believe that you can get a rematch with Munguia?
Jennifer already offered us one in the corner straight away. So they know, obviously. Everybody knows. Everyone that's seen it knows. And I'm not one to cry. I'll get back again and I'll come back and I'll win the title. No, I won't come back. We'll do it on neutral ground. I'll win the title. I'll set my family up. They've just tried to take my family's future away and I'll fucking fight hard to get it back again.
Terrific performance. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dennis Hogan there, who was denied one of the biggest boxing upsets of all time, I think it's safe to say. Andy, what did you think of the fight?
Yeah, I thought he was definitely deserved a nod. Watching the fight, there were some rounds very hard to score. Munguia being at the hometown, being the champion, being the aggressor, those close rounds, you would have to give them to him, or you could see how the judges would score him those rounds. And I was watching the fight, having already knew the result. And there was a solid period for the middle rounds where Munguia dominated and possibly hurt Hogan a couple of times. And I had an awful feeling where I thought, like, am I seeing something else that everybody else didn't see that I have to actually come out here and say that I didn't think he won a fight. But he finished very strong, Dennis. He fought a very, very smart fight. Tactically, it was spot on. He lost his way a little bit in the middle, but then he kind of rallied in the end and finished out the fight, the actual stronger fighter. I only had it by one round, 115 to 114 in favour of Dennis. Round 11, it was so hard to split. Very, very hard. I just edged it. It could have been a draw. You could have given it to Munguia, but I thought Dennis might have just done the better work and looked the fresher going down the stretch. But you never, like, it's not a complete outrageous decision. To me, it's not an outrageous.
It's not a robbery.
It's a robbery in the sense that he probably won the fight, but he just didn't get the decision. But when you take into consideration, we know boxing, this happens in the national stadium, never mind Mexico, when you're fighting the hometown fighter and the champion, you know, and you're a 20-1 underdog. It's not even your promotion. He's the promoter's fighter. So if this can happen like in the national stadium, what chance have you got going to Mexico against those odds? It's not a complete it is a robbery in the sense that he won the fight, and in a fair, all things being equal, he would have got the decision. But when you take into consideration all the things I said, this being boxing, it's not a complete outrageous decision. Like, it's not the worst I've ever seen.
No.
But he must feel hard done by. But in saying that, like, it won't be no consolation to him. He hasn't got the belt. He hasn't got the title. He hasn't had his moment. They've stole that from him. But he has actually come out looking very, very good. He's got a lot of support on his side now. And there should be a push for a rematch, if not a bigger fight of an equal standing.
There is talk of it, like, yeah, in Brisbane. And I suppose before the fight, you know, we were looking ahead to it last week. We didn't give him a chance. People kind of were looking at Munguia going, like, why are you fighting this guy? Like, who's Dennis Hogan? Mm. But now everyone knows who Dennis Hogan is. And it was an incredible performance. You spoke about footwork earlier on.
Mm.
Munguia's footwork was awful. Yeah. Many times did he miss, by the way, with his lead left hook? Like, he swung.
He kind of became a victim of his own success, yeah. Munguia. He had moments, like, especially in those middle rounds where he got where he had some really, really good punches. He was loading up way too much. All the things that you said, they played into his performance, underestimating Dennis Hogan, thinking he had nothing to do but walk in and punch at him and that he was going to get him out of there. Dennis had his tactics perfect. The footwork, the feinting, the kind of raiding tactics and the spoiling tactics in terms of hitting and holding and moving him and always finishing out the exchange with the last punch, because that really catches the eye and it seems like, oh well, he's completely won that exchange. Dennis boxed like a very disciplined fight, and he lost his way a little bit in the middle rounds when Munguia was coming on strong. But in saying that, Munguia was kind of thought, once he had those good rounds, that he was just going to, he kind of reverted back to his initial first two rounds where he thought, I'm just going to walk in here and punch. And Dennis picked up, and I thought the corner work from Dennis and Dennis Hogan was very good. Like, back yourself, they were telling him, believe. And he did that. He really responded to the advice in the corner. I thought he boxed a very good fight. But I'm not as outraged as some people are online by the decision. He definitely probably deserves the nod, at the worst, a draw.
Yeah.
In my eyes. I'm not sure how you guys saw it.
The metrics of the fight, in the sense that it was only, I had a 7-5, so it's only a one round swing and it's a draw, and that's fair enough. But it's the fact that none of the judges gave it to him. And the emotion in the fight, after the fight, that Munguia felt himself that he'd lost. And I think we spoke...
What more did you have to say? Like, yeah. The fighter kind of says he's lost and he's lost.
Yeah, and we spoke about it earlier. Like, sometimes you have to take the emotion out of it because you're supposed to be analysing the fights, but...
It's hard because you've got up, or you've stayed up till 4 a.m. and you're shouting at the TV and you think, you know, this is amazing, because you didn't know how long you got up the night before to watch Lomachenko just obliterate Krala in 4 rounds. But this is a proper fight. This is an Irish
match. It's a great fight in terms of the action as well.
Yeah.
And like, but I was wondering, like, watching the fight, and I was thinking, I was actually fearing like that I wasn't going to see Hogan winning the fight. And then I was thinking, is he benefiting from the point that no one expected anything from him going into that fight, and he's actually surprising and winning these rounds, and even the rounds he's not winning, he's competing to a very close level, that you're going to give it to him. It's, you know, that kind of element of things where you don't expect anything from somebody, and then they not overachieve, but do better than you think, and then you think, oh well, here's another round for you. But it wasn't, because he finished the round, it was nip and tuck, but he finished the fight very strongly. Round 11, close. So it could have been a draw, but I think in...
That point you made, that's exactly it. The boxing in its very nature is an emotional sport, and judges are going to get into that as well, and they're watching Hogan overachieve, as you said, to the nth degree, and they might be inclined to give him rounds. So there was kind of a slight worry from my perspective, almost second-guessing what I was watching, thinking, like, am I just giving him the benefit of the doubt here? Mm. But then, as I watched it again, same score, more or less, same amount of rounds for Dennis, 7-5, and emotion again. Glenn Rushton in the corner, Simon, who famously masterminded Jeff Horn against Manny Pacquiao. There's a bit of debate over who actually won that fight, but Horn got the nod, and it's one of the biggest upsets ever. And he was a broken man after the fight, Glenn Rushton, because he thought he cracked it.
Well, I mean, I have to apologise to Dennis Hogan, because I gave him absolutely no chance. I gave Krala a better chance against Lomachenko. You know, so I have even when I'm watching it now, I have the prejudice of knowing I gave him absolutely no chance, and he's doing better than I even imagined he could even do for one or two rounds. He fought a superb fight on the back foot, led Munguia on. I would always tend to score fights for the aggressor, but only unless the aggressor is working at a pace that they're setting, not when they're being led around. And that's essentially what Hogan did to Munguia. I didn't see that performance coming at all. In terms of a rematch, I mean, that if they're talking about dodgy decisions and bringing, okay, we want the rematch in Australia, and then they just have to Google Australian boxing matches and they see, well, the hometown fighter got a dodgy-ish decision there. That could have gone either way, the Pacquiao-Horn fight, but it's no coincidence that Horn got it over Pacquiao. So if there's going to be a rematch, it'll be somewhere in the States, I'd say.
Yeah, and last week we spoke about mitigating circumstances, Andy. Everyone was telling Munguia that Hogan's a 20-1 underdog and you're moving up to fight Canelo after this and you're struggling at the weight. This is probably your last fight here. So all these factors are in his head as well. Is it doing Dennis a disservice to say Munguia was off the boil, or is he just kind of not quite?
He was off the brawl. I think a lot of those things come into play. He's also working with a new coach as well, which takes time to adjust Munguia. And I think Dennis being better than he gave him credit for. Dennis boxing a great fight. Munguia probably slightly overlooking him and maybe struggling with the weight. All those things will lead into him underperforming. But how good is he actually? We don't really know. You know, even in his last fight before this, he was kind of not flat, but he didn't set the world on fire. Yeah, so he looked good against Saddam Ali, but. That's a big win, but that's been a while ago now. It's been a few fights since then. I would like to see the rematch. I think it deserves a rematch. But Munguia and De La Hoya, I don't know. They with those fights being up there, for him being such a big name in Mexico, he could move up and fight those guys now. Mm. And he might not bother with going for the rematch. He'll probably see, like, I got the win. I'm not going back to give this guy another chance. I'm going to go up and get paid. But
and get beaten by the looks of him. Like, I mean, yeah. If you look Triple G, Canelo,
Andre. I never heard of him. He was like 17, 18, and a very young guy. And then he was put in to fight. He was kind of earmarked to fight Golovkin when Canelo failed his test. And that fight never came about for whatever reason. But then he pops up and straight up, like, before Golovkin fights, he steps in and fights Saddam Ali and dominates him and beats him. And then you were thinking, oh, did the fight with Golovkin not happen because this kid's actually really good? You know, they knew, so they kind of had a look at him and said, well, no, we won't. We'll get somebody else easier. And who did he fight? Vanis Monterosian then?
Golovkin.
So I was, but since then, he's kind of not plateaued a little bit. And he's still a young fighter, still learning. He certainly has good punching power, but he shouldn't be the champion now if everything was fair. Like, we'd be talking about one of the greatest victories for an Irish fighter on foreign soil, probably ever, in terms of what was expected, you know?
I was watching it back. I think watching it when it happened, as I said, the emotion, and you're watching it and you're up late and, you know, you're trying to watch it, as I said, analyze it, but at the same time, it's hard not to get caught up in it because there's an Irish guy in the ring.
You always take those, kind of give it a little caveat or an asterisk when you watch a fighter like Matthew Macklin going to Germany fighting Sturm. Yeah, okay, he's doing well, he's winning the round, but unless you're absolutely smashing him, you got to think, like, oh no. You know, you got to assume that they're not giving me these rounds.
So then I watch it back and I'm thinking, okay, like, it's, yeah, I'm still giving it to Hogan, but it's just afterwards, like, you see Oscar De La Hoya coming into the ring and he's got his big smile on his face and you think, what are you smiling at? Like, your boy is lost here. But he walks into the ring, sure, he knows, like, that there's no chance that his fighter can lose. Like, it's like when I watched Canelo and Triple G, I remember the same thing, De La Hoya walking in, kind of, you know, smiling his face, thinking, again, why are you laughing? Like, Canelo's just been beaten. Like, you know, your money ticket is just after getting beaten by Triple G, and then the fight is scored a draw. Like, so, yeah, I just find it really frustrating. Like, as much as you love boxing, you just almost nearly accept these things, and that's not right.
I know the compu box stats don't match for much or count for much, but I think Hogan only landed one more punch. Now he threw about half the amount.
Throughout the fight, that was the kind of funny thing about it. During watching it on this commentary, they had a Hogan winning, but then when they would throw to the CompuBox scores or whatever it was, Munguia would be in the lead. They don't really tell the story.
They don't. You know? But I find in close fights sometimes it's no harm having a look to see where we're at. I know
Dalso said that Munguia threw three times as much but missed.
He did throw a lot of shots, but it did miss a lot.
He only landed 18%.
That's down to Dennis, so, too, and down to his bad footwork.
So, yeah, so essentially he landed one more punch, but missed, like, the punch connection rate was way down, so...
He was landing the heavier shots, though. That has
he landed some good body shots.
Like, Dennis did land some really good clear shots, eye-catching shots when Munguia was pulling out high with his chin.
Yeah.
He was landing punches, a lot of effective punches, but they weren't really eye-catching shots. Like, he would land a clear overhand right, but... It would knock a breeze out of Munguia and that kind of thing.
That counts against you as well, if it's not snapping the punches.
Especially going down the stretch when they were tiring a bit. Mm. There was a real lack of snap on both of those punches, yeah. But, yeah, it's a shame for Dennis. I wonder how he feels now, you know. Having been in that, I can remember, my own experience with Chavez, when you're in that kind of situation, when you know, no matter what you do, no matter what, like, you're never going to get this. You do become, you get sick, like, very easy to get disillusioned with the sport and the business. There's the business of boxing that you're in. Easy to walk away. You know, once you've kind of given it your all, and no matter what you do, you're never going to win it. Like, you just... kind of makes you not want it, you know, not want it as much because it's tainted in some way.
Would Hogan not have known this, though? When he's given the fight, it's in Mexico against Munguia, a Mexican fighter. Like, Hogan's not known for his power.
You have to take the chance when you get it.
Yeah, I get
waiting
that.
Around, he's 34, he had to take the, had to go there. He had to take it, accept it on their terms.
Like, I suppose he performed so well that... He might get another...
He's going to get a big fight now.
Munguia might move up and vacate the belt, and then Hogan is in the mix.
We'll be in the mix with anybody, yeah.
But what I mean is, going over there, surely it must have been in the back of his mind that he could get...
You have to block those things out. Yeah. You have to can't even let that enter your mind.
Is that sure the laptop with their fight plan got robbed 2 days before the fight from the hotel?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just coincidental.
And
or not.
They still didn't know how to work out the game plan. That doesn't say much for them.
Yeah, but it's not... That doesn't mean that it was Munguia's guys. Maybe it was just a disgruntled employee of the hotel they were staying, saw a nice shiny laptop and said, hey...
Or else it could have been... The lads could have given them dodgy footage as in, let's throw them off with this footage.
The odd chance that they take
My gut feeling is he won't get a rematch. It'll be... Munguia will move up and vacate the title.
The powers are too big, you know.
Munguia's not fighting Hogan again. Mm. Whether Hogan gets another shot at that title, that's another thing entirely. But Golden Boy won a match with Spike O'Sullivan. They've been talking about that for a few weeks.
Munguia or Hogan?
Hogan. Mm. That'd be an all-Irish fight.
That'd be a great fight.
Great stuff.
Great fight. Jason Quigley on there as well.
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
But it's a great out for Golden Boy because, you're not getting a Munguia fight. But we can have this all-Irish clash and all of a sudden it's not the worst come-down fight if he's not getting the Munguia rematch.
You're going to have to wait 11 months then. For St. Patrick's Day, you can't have an Irish.
You couldn't be mad.
First ever all Irish world title fight could have been. That's what Hogan was saying to me beforehand. He wants to come back to the Three Arena in December, so those plans are up in smoke. But hopefully,
well, if the belt gets vacated, those two would be ideal candidates for the
make
fight.
Make it happen. Yeah. Mm. Before we move on to the world stage, a word for Michaela Walsh, who won a gold medal at the Chemistry World Cup.
Yeah.
There's a few Irish medals at that, but she, another gold for her collection, and only 25, but...
It's great, yeah. No, I didn't see any of the fights. But it's a great result for her, because it is just a tough competition, the Chemistry Cup. It's not just your average multi-nation, it's...
The mini worlds, isn't
it? Yeah, the best countries regularly send the best fighters there. Mm. And it's always a good place to medal if you can. It's a good standard, right? The highest standard of amateur boxing, really, outside of world and European or anything like that.
And in terms of our Tokyo prospects, she'd be right up there, wouldn't she?
Yeah, she's up there. She's up there. With Keely Harrington, you know, the two of them, they're probably, and we always talk about the baby Canelo here, you know, you guys are big fans. Amy Broadhurst. So it's looking good. It's like it's building nicely, you know. It's not the 8 and 9 medals that we're used to having, but when you look at the guys who are winning medals, they're consistent, and you can see that they're high quality fighters, you know. Mm. Tony Brown got a medal, Joe Ward,
Carly McNall.
Yeah, it was really good. You know, a lot of guys didn't. There was a lot of guys lost early in the first fight, so that was like, and being inside that kind of a camp when guys lose early, you can react in two ways, where it kind of affects the camp, where there's like everyone's kind of downtrodden and their kind of enthusiasm and emotions are low, and so that kind of spreads around. Or else you can kind of say like, well, I'm going to be the one who stands out here and actually brings home a medal, and it kind of emboldens you and kind of makes you stronger in a sense. So that's like the ones who medaled it actually means a little bit more, that they actually medaled, and the ones who won, like Michaela winning gold, shows that they have a special bit about their character, because they would have had those conditions where there was five or six of their teammates beaten on the first day. They would have been coming back to the team hotel, how'd you get on? Oh, I got beat. Oh no, it's really good, the competition's really good, like the fighters are really strong, and all those little doubts. And also your teammates probably starting to lax where they're eating and drinking rubbish and sweets around you.
Yeah.
And like, it's such a distraction, you know what I mean? So like, well done to those guys who did me on that day. Yeah.
Yeah, and someone who knows all about medals in the amateur game is Larissa Shields, Phil, and in the pros now, undisputed middleweight champion after 9 fights.
Yeah,
having unified the light middleweight championship as well. It's some going.
Yeah, still only 24, and definitely, like, you know, Katie Taylor's obviously a little bit older, but Katie Taylor and Larissa Shields are certainly open the profile of female boxing. But I think she actually could have stopped Hammer. This goes back to the two minute rounds.
Yeah, there was actually a 10-8 round in that fight,
and they changed that because she could have done her in the 7th round, and then when they came out for the 8th round, thought, right, she's going to stop her. But see, Hammer was able to look at the clock and think, I can
get through it.
Like, is that ever going to change?
Why not? Like, for all things.
Like, I always find it as well watching Katie Taylor that she's in the flow, and then the round is coming to an end, and she's not getting as many stoppages as maybe she.
And she's called for 3 minute rounds as well. So if anyone's going to break through that.
Especially like with the two of them being like such storied amateurs, do you want the full pro experience?
Yeah.
You want to fight a 3 minute round. You know, when I was amateur, it was 2 minute rounds. And I wanted to fight 3 minute rounds, you know, because there's more time there. You have to box differently.
Yeah.
You have to completely box differently when there's a 2 minute round. You have to start fast, you have to maintain. It's more of a sprint. There's no real time to sit and think about what's going on and plot your way through a fight. But yeah, she's done extremely well, hasn't she, Clarissa? She's got a great story. She's very hungry. She's a competitor.
She said after the fight, she is the greatest woman of all time.
Mm.
So, you know, she's only getting going now. Like, and you could definitely see big improvement. Her, she's kind of sitting down on her punches a bit more, and her right hand, like the power that she had as well.
Yeah.
So I was.
She's very good. I don't know about being the best yet.
Yeah.
But in terms of a competition, like Hammer, like, she's not a great boxer, is she? You know, she doesn't have to do much to beat her, Clarissa Shields.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like she was up against her. Like, that's the only problem with the female boxing has now, is the lack of depth in all the divisions, where these fighters, the standout ones, like Clarissa Shields, Katie Taylor, Selena Brockhurst, they don't have the competition in their divisions to actually showcase their skills. You know, that they can make a claim where they are the best, but
That will come, though. I mean, this is like it's very much
come,
in
hopefully.
The infancy.
See,
where like they're going to inspire the next generation.
Like, I was just thinking about female. Yeah, do you think this is going to continue? Like, it's a recent, not a trend, but it's a recent thing. Female boxing being so high profile. Do you think, like, when Katie retires, do you think it's a bubble around Katie? Well, I don't know. What,
no, I think
guys, so
I think there's girls in Ireland looking at Katie Taylor going, I want to be.
They can
like
box.
Her.
They might be, and they might be able to box. Like, I know there's a lot of kids, like, and I'm meeting them all the time, and they're excellent boxers.
Hmm.
But with Katie, there was this X factor, and it was the perfect timing in terms of her profile and her personality and how she fights. She's so good, and her name is like recognizable. She's a household name, you know. That
I think it'll be hard to find somebody to match those. Like, I know she's carrying the flag, but I wonder how female boxing will go once she retires. You know, it'll be interesting
to
see in world boxing, in a sense. You know, like Krista, she's similar to Katie. She's a two-time Olympian, Olympic champion. There's not many opportunities outside of the big. Like, when you look outside of Katie, outside of Krista Shields. Selena Brockhurst, she's toiled for years. She was unified champion for years and didn't get a TV fight like that outside of Germany, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how female boxing, does it go from strength to strength to strength to strength? I think the standard will, but will there be the appetite for it on these big shows, on live television events as we go forward?
The only thing I can think of in similar to that would be, if you look at how the UFC took women's MMA, and they had the star in Ronda Rousey. Mm. And I would say that she had some fairly easy title defences, but she made quick work of them. And then she obviously got knocked off the top by Holly Holm. But in general, the standard since in the 3 or 4 years has the base and the depth has risen substantially from when Rousey started. And so they've added.
Is female MMA getting as big as platform as it did when Ronda Rousey was there now?
No, it's not. Well, the platform is there, but the superstar really isn't.
The quality of fights are probably better.
The quality of fights are better. The standard and the depth is better.
There could be more talent coming through, and I suppose the challenge is, how do you stand out? How do you get a profile like Katie Taylor? That would be my only concern, but I think the quality is going to go up. And surely that means that more people want to watch it. But how do you market stars? Like Katie Taylor for Eddie Hearn was easy to market because an Olympic champion. Like, everyone in this country knows who Katie Taylor is now. Most people in the world.
But she can fight, like, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
She stands out because of how she fights.
Yeah.
But the other great thing about it is, because it's at the moment such a small pool, it's the best of the best will have to fight within one or two fights. There's no, like in the men division, you want four champions and this, that, and the other. Now, there is obviously four belts, but just in terms of,
like, just on a technical level, the thing is with Katie is that she punches, and I know it's not, this is not, like, you don't want to compare them, but she punches like a man, you know, and she has a technique and the speed and the power. You can't always say that about other female fighters, you know, even looking at Shields and Hammer, the punches were kind of, there wasn't that snap, that, and I don't know if that's an integral part of watching fights, but for me, I like to see that. I like to see speed, I like to see power, and I don't know, I'm getting into it really deep, so I'm probably causing myself a lot of trouble, but the female anatomy, the upper body, is not where the strength is a lot of the time, you know, and like with Katie, she starts so young, and the girls are starting young now. But that's why Katie was. That's why Katie's so good to watch. When you watch it, you can't separate her from male boxers.
Well, even Frampton was talking about it recently on his own podcast. How that when early on in her career, he would have her sparring with Carl, and he'd be roaring at Carl to lean on her and put the pressure on her and to treat her as if she was, you know, male opposition. And that's how she built up the strength, you know. So
she got in there at Rigon, though.
Yeah, exactly.
No, when he was Rigon, though, you know,
like she said, and she happened to be coming through the high performance unit when it was getting to its peak, and she was against the other, the glut of Olympic medals we've had.
Yeah,
she also had that surrounding her as well.
Barnes, isn't it? Hell for leather.
So perhaps some debate around who number one is in the women's side of the street, but in men's boxing, there's only one man in town. That's Vasily Lomachenko, who had another impressive win on Friday night in California. There's not much more you can say. But Andy, just like people, you see fellow boxers come out and say, this guy's on another level, he's doing things we've never seen before. Can you just tell us, like, in plain terms, some of the stuff that he's actually doing? Because it's hard to...
Yeah, it's hard to see.
Yeah.
But, like we're probably looking at the best boxer of all time. You know, in this day and age, where science and training and techniques and technology is so advanced compared to years ago, this guy is still miles ahead of everybody. Like Sugar Ray Robinson, like he was beautiful. You know, he was a beautiful boxer. He boxed with rhythm. He could knock you out. He had hand speed. He had it all. But like Lomachenko is different. He's not that kind of poetic kind of a piece of art. You know, he's not mechanical. But he's kind of methodical, and he just will just go through you. You know, he's like a hot knife through butter. He's just like he does everything perfect.
And, like, I don't know. He just... It's very hard to see what he does. Like, but he just does everything so well, everything that you'd want. He has great defense, he has great head movement, great footwork, good punch power, speed, slot selection, ring IQ, generalship.
And the timing is different. It's not like you can't time it, because he mixes up the timing the whole
well,
time.
Well, yeah, and he hits you when you're not, like, he hits you when you are when you're trying to reorganize. Yeah. You know, he'll hit you at the tail end of with something, like you saw it against Colliday. He kind of hit him with the combination. Colliday was moving around, he was still hitting him, yeah, with an up jab, and like it rocked his head back. Like, and no one else is doing that in boxing at the moment. You know, he can, like, he'll force you forward, move you around, get you out of position, and then he'll attack you. Where most other fighters might be able to do that, but then they have to kind of regather and regroup themselves and get in a position where his feet are so good he can do that. Like, it's just. It's incredible to watch him, but he, like, in saying that, he worked, like, Collar was completely out of his depth, you know, and it's something we've seen now, and I just thought, like, look, it's one thing being out here on the outside of the ring and watching it, but when you've seen it now repeatedly with, like, fighters from England going up against these big fighters from the UK and not putting up much of a fight. Like, when we look at Dennis Hogan going up against similar odds, and the fight, he went, like, Dennis wouldn't let her hang out there, and he had a good strategy, he fought his heart out, and if it came to it, when Munguia put it up to him, he let it all hang out, and he traded with him, and had a fight with him. And, like, you look at Rocky Fielding, not really, you can't say that, Bellew did fight Usyk, he just Usyk was a better guy, but, you know, Crawler and that, like, go down and go out on your shield, though. Like, you know, at least, like, I can't take anything away from Crawler. Like, he had to go in there, he had to take that fight, he had to fight the man, he had to fight the best out there, and he gave it a go, but he was just completely outmatched.
And then to
some point you just think, like, what's the point of this? You know, what's the point? I know Crawler gets a good payday, it was reported that his purse was $300,000. Is that, like, that's good money for in anybody's book, but, like,
I was taking that beat for $300,000, to be honest.
Just 250.
What was it, $100,000 around? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot of money. It is, but, like, he'll probably retire off that now. He's fought the best. Not much more you can ask for, you know, and he's been in there with the best, Linares and now Lomachenko. He's been in with the best of his division, and he's had a great career. I'm sure he feels like, I wish I would have just bit down and let my hands go at least once before it was over.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm glad you said about he could be the greatest boxer of all time, because Carl Frampton put up a tweet similar to that, that it was like, a lot of people talk about their favourite fighter and they'll go back to like the 80s or even further to Sugar Ray Robinson, and sometimes we ignore what's in front of our face, and we could be watching the greatest ever right now. So
the thing is about him as well, I don't think he'll once he realises or feels like he's starting to slip a little bit, I don't think he's gonna type of guy's gonna hang around for a younger fighter to like come up and beat him. You know, where those old past fighters, the champions, they stayed out there. Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, Roy Jones, Sugar Ray Robinson, they stayed fighting well past their prime, and they got beaten by lesser fighters. But with Lomachenko, you get the feeling that when he ever senses that he's not the man he is now, that he'll step away from boxing and go out. The only problem he has, like Katie Taylor, is who can he fight? Who can actually test him? Who's out there? Like,
he mentioned Garcia after the fight,
but that's gone now, isn't it? After Spence,
mm-hmm.
Mikey Garcia, shine has gone off that, and no one would give Mikey a chance against. I wouldn't now after the Spence fight. Before it, he still wouldn't have given much of a chance.
Still, just because I still like to see it though. Why? I kind of felt shortchanged when he getting to see him in what is effectively three rounds. What, by the way? Referee, it was the same ref that
Jack Rees.
Yeah, that did the Fury Wilder
fight. I thought he was okay. He called a standing count. It was Crawler's reaction.
Yeah,
because maybe he forgot the rules that there's standing counts in California. I don't know, but like it was his reaction that kind of signaled it was stopped, but it wasn't stopped.
Yeah, but the two officials jumped in as well, and then Lomachenko was there celebrating, and then the ref was like, why are you guys in the ring?
That happened with Carl Froch and Lucien Boutte, remember that?
Well, that was Eddie Hearn jumping into the ring, and then he jumped onto Carl Froch, didn't he? And then Froch said when he turned around, there was no one there. It was like this phantom celebration with Eddie Hearn, which I'd only seen back on the replay.
Boxing would be very different if he would rightly been disqualified for that, because he should have been. Apparently that's in the rules, so things would have gone a very different route.
He wouldn't have got to follow Wembley.
That's it, exactly.
What about Javante Davis?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah. That would be a good fight.
See, they're playing the long game, Javante Davis, and he is a very good young fighter. Someone who could test him.
Wait till he gets old.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do. This is a thing that's always been played out, and especially Mayweather was a master at it, putting people off on the long finger until it was the right time.
Maybe it had.
You know? but it's not like, I don't. Even if Lomachenko waits 2 years, do you see him getting beat by Javante Davis?
No. See, he's a featherweight, really, and he was in against the legit lightweight the other night, and that wasn't an issue for him, but we said it before that it's probably ambition and weight that's going to beat him ultimately. He's not going to be beaten by complacency or skills or anything like that. It's whether he gets bored at 135 and moves up to 140, probably get away with it at 140, and then he gets called out by Errol Spence or something. He's like, I'll take that as well, and then it ends badly, do you know?
I'd still give him a chance.
I'll give him a chance. He's beaten Errol, I think.
Well, you look at what Usyk was doing at he's going to be fighting a heavy now, but even as an amateur, he fought at super heavy, you know, and heavy. It'll be interesting. Like, I don't know.
It's just that Ukrainian, like, what that Ukrainian Olympic school that they all came through. It's produced like an incredible batch of fighters.
It's always done.
You know?
Yeah, Ukraine are always one of the strongest nations whenever you fight them.
Yeah,
that's the worst part about watching Lomachenko fights is when they're over.
And he keeps getting injured as well. There was something about his hand being broken. I was like, oh, not again. But I think he's okay. He should
be fine. Yes, it doesn't need surgery.
Challenge him to fight with one hand and see how he does.
Probably win a fight without using his hands. He's that good.
Yeah. He keels out from tiredness missing
him. That's it. He forces his opponent his submission or something.
Just a random one, like apropos of nothing. The up jab you mentioned, Andy, the way he throws it is like a power shot. As if most fighters throw it, like a dismissive sort of range finder, and he's just launching through.
Yeah, and rocking people with it. Like, there was a little video of an up close angle of the final punch, and it was a sickening blow. Did you hear it kind of crawl out top of the head? Like, it's Crawler, he would probably feel like he knew he was in with the best. He'll have to take it on the chin now, but I bet you somewhere inside he feels like, I wish I would have just dug down and just for once let one big shot rip, you know, and because ultimately you're going out anyway. Same with Rocky Fielding, and you know,
you're going to lose. May as well just go down and fight.
Mm.
Yeah, so I think we can all agree Lomachenko's number one, but elsewhere in the pen for pen conversation is three division king Terence Crawford. He takes on another multi-weight champion this weekend in Britain's Amir Khan.
I can never go back.
The success story of Amir Khan goes on.
I avenge certain defeats.
Huge right hand and Khan down. It's all over right here.
An Olympic silver medalist, two-time world champion. Yet my critics never stop talking. They say I'll never be a champion again.
The legs did a funny dance.
My chin is shot and my time is up. They say this is the wrong fight. Crawford is too strong, too fast, too skillful.
He's the best in the world.
They say pound for pound he's a king. They say it's over for Amir Khan. I say stop talking about me.
Terrific shot from Khan. It's celebration time.
They say I will just be a memory.
A dazzling attack.
I say you will never forget my name.
Amir Khan.
So Amir Khan looking to pull off his own underdog upset this weekend. Virgil Hunter's back in his corner this week, Andy, having had Joe Guzin for the last couple of fights. If you were Virgil Hunter, what would you be telling Amir Khan, tactics-wise?
Discipline. Box like an amateur. Get back to that. Don't get greedy at all. Don't ever, even if you got him rocking and hurt at any stage, don't go for the kill. Just keep out, move, use your feet, and pop, 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 pop. Use your hand speed, what you're good at. And even like, and jab and jab and jab and move and make it an awkward fight for him. But Phil had a good prediction, and I go, what did you say, Phil?
Well, I think, no, just to
say it in the exact same time. Say it in the exact same time that you said.
What I said is going to happen is Khan is going to be, he's going to look good for a few rounds, and you know, you'll be thinking, he might do this. And what will happen, he will get greedy and he'll leave himself open and he'll get put to sleep. And I'm thinking sixth or seventh round. But before that, you'll be thinking, I am your mechanic. And he is a quality fighter, but he'll just have one lapse, and then if Crawford catches him with a really good shot, then Khan is in trouble. And I'm a little bit worried about the timeout he had as well. Like, he didn't exactly convince against Vargas. Yeah. Like, he started well. So he seems to be starting these fights well. We've seen it before. Remember the Garcia knockout? Started that fight well. Even the Canelo fight, he was doing really well.
Yeah.
He was doing well. And it depends. Like, you'd be watching it. I know you're on TV duty at the weekend. So, and you know, because it's Amir Khan, and the commentary will be swaying towards Amir Khan, and they'll be saying, "Isn't he doing brilliant?" And then all of a sudden, it'll just come to an end. But I think when Amir Khan eventually does retire, like, you'll just look at his list of opponents, you say, this lad, he didn't shy away from anyone.
He kind of, like, all that he's achieved in the game as an amateur and as a pro, he kind of, at this stage, he still kind of needs this win, doesn't he? Like, if he can win this fight, like, he's actually a Hall of Famer. You know, he's actually going into the Hall of Fame if he can win this fight. And you got to take your hat off him for daring to be great. But I hope he doesn't end up like the other fighters, recent fighters from like Crawler, like Phelan, who went over there and just don't compete with the best. You know,
I think
the best.
He will.
He's always shown that he will. He's gonna box a move. He might win rounds. He's gonna try and steal rounds, and he might.
I think he will win rounds.
Yeah, he will.
Like, I just think it'll come.
Can Crawford catch up with him?
Yeah,
that's the thing. How and when.
And it'll be good. His fights are always good.
They're always exciting good to fights. Watch,
yeah. And no one can ever accuse him of not shooting his shot. He's always had a go when he's in there. And greedy is a brilliant word. It sums up his whole career, really, because Danny Garcia fight, it was almost too easy for him. And Danny, meanwhile, was timing him the whole time, waiting just to land one shot.
He starts his attack from too far out.
Yeah.
Because he has that kind of explosive footwork and hand speed, you can do that for a while, but the best fighters will start having a look. Why am I getting hit? What's going on here? What's coming at me? And they'll start saying, okay, here he comes, and like Garcia, just close his eyes and through the left hook. And that was it. But he's shown in the past against Contender, like against other guys, that he can fight disciplined fights, that he can do that, that he can have the concentration for that period of time. So he has to do it now. It's hard to say this is his hardest fight. It's not, because he's been there with such great fights, but he's fighting one, possibly the second best fighter in the world. We just spoke with the best, so he's up against it.
Yeah, I think Crawford will have too much for him, obviously. But I don't think he'll get knocked out spark clean. I think it'll be stopping the ropes, ref kind of going, you've taken enough. And Crawford will just overwhelm him after an even enough fight for the first few rounds. But he'll turn up, it'll be a great fight, but he won't win.
Funny the way it's been framed as like the old veteran against this young up and comer when they're relatively close in age. Like, it feels like Amir Khan's been around forever.
And he has, and he's looked what he's done in the sport. Olympic silver medalist at 17. But he kind of needs this win now to go out on. You know, in a way, people always look at the book fight, but in a way, it's like.
That's still there if he loses, though.
Yeah, no one's going to want to see it now. No one wants to see it.
It might feel like a small hall.
Bringing up the Kell Brook fight again.
Small hall.
We talked about this film in January.
I brought it up.
He brought it up.
No, nobody wants to see that now. That kind of ship sailed.
I want to see it. I don't want to talk about it until it's signed. Yeah, that's the problem, my man.
Even when it's signed, it's not it's not secure.
You mentioned Kell Brook. There's actually talk of Kell Brook getting Crawford if Crawford wins, because they're running out of opponents fast. And Brook's a sellable name. And you mentioned you're on the BT Sport coverage, and I have to say BT Sport have done a great job in pre-production in recent fights. The No Filter series with Trista Dixon is really good. But ESPN are obviously showing it on pay-per-view, and Crawford on pay-per-view hasn't really...
That's where
Amir Khan
comes into it. That's where he has a value, because he is a well-known name across, you know, globally.
But Top Rank are relatively under pressure, because you see UFC are shooting the lights out on the same platform numbers wise, and Bob Arum hasn't really put on a huge show yet, and the Tyson Fury Schwartz fight isn't necessarily going to do that either.
And there was issues with the UFC broadcast as well, with the American side of things, so they're trying to get that in gear for future broadcasts.
So the pressure's on to deliver this needs to be a good fight.
ESPN need a proper stream as well.
And we mentioned Fury and the the Pulev infamous now, that fight a couple of weeks ago was like the lowest rated boxing event in years. It was headlined by a Bulgarian that no one in America had ever heard of. So
they know about him now.
They need to get...
For the wrong reasons.
Wrong reasons, yeah.
They need to get their shop in order. He's dismissed as any tension, but I'd say it's significant that Eddie Hearn's not at this fight at the weekend, because he obviously has a show in London and he's decided, even though he's Amir Khan's promoter, Khan's gone over there sort of on his own.
Yeah, and Khan's always kind of stood out from him, hasn't he? I think it was only a small short-term deal, and he's kind of operated at his, and has his own promotion thing as well. But
it's probably disappointment that Khan was basically... The brick fight was the money.
This is the last fight, yeah. So, like, Eddie, like, Paul Hatton is, and I don't want to be speaking with Eddie and just be taking a percentage of the purse from all the promotion, and that'll be it. And that'll be, they'll shake hands and go their separate way, I guess. Because Eddie Hearn, the idea was that they would, I guess, I'm guessing that the idea was that they'd have these two fights against, you know, a couple of patsies, then him and Brooke would fight. But they had different ideas.
And the lads have given their prediction, Andy, there. What do you think is going to happen here?
I have to think about, like...
You can save it for Saturday if you want.
No, I want to
answer the question, Andy.
And you have to give yours as well.
I think Khan's going to win, sure. Why not?
It still doesn't matter. Anyway, it doesn't what we say.
No, it's just really to walk in next week.
Yeah. It's hard to bet against Crawford, isn't it? It's hard to back Khan. But I would love to see him do it. Khan.
Yeah.
He's a sound lad. Good fighter. Legend of the game. But I'd probably say... Late stoppage for Crawford, or points win for Crawford, maybe. Yeah.
And I mentioned a Matchroom show in London, which is headlined by Dave Allen against Lucas Brown, quite bizarrely. It's a strange story that Dave Allen's managed to get himself into this position, but fair play to him.
It's a hardy story, isn't it? It's a pretty good story, I guess, but who's buying it? Like, this is something that they're trying to spin, isn't it? Like, he's funny on Twitter, he's a character, but... There are so many great fighters in the UK and all over the world that could have this opportunity. And then you've got Dave Allen fighting Lucas Brown, who was a drug cheat as well, who's gotten smashed in his last fight. Well, not his last fight, the one previous. Nearly got knocked out in his last fight too. Who cares? You know, I don't really care about this fight. The only thing I'm interested in on the show is, and it's probably self-assertion, is Josh Kelly and see what he does. He's the one world-class fighter. Like, those guys, they're not world-class. And Derry Chisora has been world-class as a heavyweight, but he's gone down the pecking order now as well, looking to rebuild. But Josh Kelly's the only one on that show that excites me, or I'd have an interest in fight in watching, you know?
And Josh Kelly was supposed to fight David Avanesian just before Christmas there and fell through at the 11th hour. Then Avanesian went to Bilbao and shocked the boxing world, basically. No one saw that one coming, so...
Avanesian's a good fighter.
Yeah,
is that a fight you'd like to see? He'd be Shane Mosley, like. Yeah. Shane Mosley was past his best, but he was still Shane Mosley.
Mm.
Like, he's a good fighter. I think it's gone because there's been so much bad blood between the camps now. Such a dispute. Like, I was there that day. That was supposed to be on the Kelbrook when he fought... Who did he fight? He only fought recently. Kelbrook's last fight, yeah.
Rafa?
I was doing the commentary. I was there, right... Text Adam, I arrived, said, yeah, come on into the hotel. I was staying the same hotel. I got to the hotel, text him, what's the room? Didn't get no reply. Sandy, coming in an hour late, Andy, we have to go home. Josh is very sick. We've had the doctor up, he said, running the temperature, he's got a fever. So apparently, he'd made the weight, worked hard to make the weight, struggled to make the weight, made it, and then just his fever just went straight up that evening, and he was suffering. So they're never going to take a fight, not with a talent like that, not with a special talent like Josh Kelly. They're not going to take a chance by putting him in there with a really good fighter like that guy. So yeah, let it go.
And Chisora is on the card as well, as you said, linked up with Dave Caldwell quite late in the day. You mentioned Dave Caldwell a couple of weeks ago as one of the best coaches around. Is there anything he can bring to the table at this stage?
It's hard to know, isn't it? He's such a kind of headstrong guy. I like Chisora. I think he's been so unlucky, and he's been a great kind of, not campaigner, but servant. He's a controversial guy. He's kind of mellowed in recent years, hasn't he? But he's always been a controversial guy. He's sold big, always promoted fights well.
He always held up his end of the bargain.
He always comes to fight. Exactly. Always comes to fight. I've probably seen him in one bad fight when he fought in Monaco, but that was probably an off night, but... He always comes to fight, and he can give anybody a tough night, you know? Very unlucky in some big, big fights.
And we've said in previous weeks, Phil, UK boxing's a bit of flux at the moment, and that card has a couple of names that they might try and develop. Conor Benn is back.
Yeah.
Marketable guy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's the story. It's... Yeah, I like the thoughts of the Bens against the Eubanks, like, you know, a tag team kind of thing.
Harlem Eubank is boxing now. He's in Alan Boost gym too, and he's really improving. Had a great knockout last year. But the one they would like is Kelly and Ben. I would like to see that. They've both talked about it a lot. Yeah, talked about a bit of smack at each other. I think it's a good fight. Two good young fighters.
And you said a couple of weeks ago that of all the Olympians at the time, Adam had earmarked Josh Kelly from a long way out over the likes of Boazzi and stuff. What's Josh Kelly got in terms of his...
He's a perfect kind of style for Adam. Adam just said, like, he already does a lot of things that I like. And when I watched a little video of him, I could see that he has the head movement, he has the good feet, he has the punches. He's kind of, not flash, but he's kind of stylish in how he fights. Like, I've probably told you the story already, but like his first day in the gym, I was in the gym and Billy Joe Saunders, we were both training. And he comes in and he's not in shape, and he gets in and he does a few rounds of both of us, and he holds his own coming in, like, not being sharp, not being any, you know. And that says enough about it. And people ask me, he's called Pretty Boy Kelly, he's a good looking kid, like, can he take it? And he can, because I've seen it in the gym, you know. I've landed a few good shots on him, and he's always come back and answered me back, you know. He's not been one to wilt or shy away from any challenge. So yeah, he's a sound lad, very funny, good young kid. He kind of has it all. Signed a big endorsement deal with Champion Sports now, so. Or Champion, yeah. Not Champion Sports, but so he's doing, like, it's doing well, and he's one who could become like a crossover star for boxing. I'd like to see a bit more activity now. I recently had a baby, so I know that kind of was taking over a little bit, so but
it can have an effect on you.
Yeah, I know all about it. Yeah, get back active and get going. Yeah,
we do know Lewis Ritson beat him in the amateurs, though. We know that, don't we?
Do you, yeah? Is that true?
We all do now, yeah.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
There you go. That's a good note to end things on, lads. Thanks for coming in.
Cheers.
Thanks to producer Tom, as always, and thanks to everyone for tuning in. We'll chat to you next week.
For once in my life, I have someone who needs me. Someone I've needed so long. For once unafraid, I can go where life leads me. Somehow I know I'll be strong. For once I can touch what my heart used to dream of long before I do. Oh, someone warm like you would make my dream come true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For once in my life, I won't let sorrow hurt me. Not like it's hurt me before. Have something I know won't desert me. I'm not alone anymore. Oh, once I can say this is mine, you can't take it. Long as I know I have love, I can make it. For once in my life, I have someone who needs me. Can't take